Whether you're looking for answers to specific life questions or seeking to become the best version of you possible, welcome to the Mental Breakdown and Psych Reg podcast, where we offer insight, information, and strategies based upon research and years of practice as clinical psychologists. So sit back, have a listen, and get connected with our hosts, Dr. Bernie Wilkinson and Dr. Richard Marshall. Welcome back, Richard. Let's talk about reality today.
This, I'm telling you, this is going to take a little bit longer than usual.
Is it?
Well, I think it is.
We'll see.
Okay.
This is an article or a column or a blog post. I don't ever know really what the difference is between those three things. I always try to...
I don't know, somewhere between a blog and an article.
Yeah. Okay. Julio Bortoloso in our blog site,
right.
psychreg.org. And it's entitled, How We Construct Our Own Reality.
I have to tell you.
Okay.
I had to read this twice.
Yeah.
But this is one of the most interesting articles I've read in a very, very long time. It's simple idea, but really, really fascinating. And I have to hand it to this guy for articulating this the way he has.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. He's a school counselor.
Yeah.
And he's getting his education doctorate. But you're right. I like the way that he thinks about this. I like the way that he's conceptualizing this and putting it together. It's really interesting.
Right. And he is a student. He's a follower of Albert Ellis, who was the founder of something called Rational Emotive Behavior Therapy.
Right.
And simply put, Ellis said, there are additional explanations for why we do the things that we do other than just to get rewarded.
Right.
So he sort of came after Skinner and said that there has to be more than just behavior. And he said there are feelings involved, therefore emotions. And we also behave because of how we're feeling or our emotions. Okay. Mm-hmm. So Bortoloso is a disciple, if you will, follower of Albert Ellis and Rational Emotive Behavioral Therapy. The one thing I like about this is that you hear a lot of talk these days about we all create our own reality.
Right.
And yet we don't.
Right.
I mean, reality is reality. There's all this talk about fake news and alternative facts, okay? And you say, well, there are no facts. There really are some.
Right.
Okay. And in science, we talk about reality and real entities.
Right.
And a real entity is something that is confirmed by your senses. Mm-hmm. Okay. So we know that this table exists because I can confirm it with my senses.
Mm-hmm.
And there is enough constancy in the world to get human beings to the moon and back.
Right.
And if you didn't have some constancy, some facts, you wouldn't be able to do that.
Right.
So we all acknowledge that there is some type of reality. What he's saying here is that each of us creates our own reality.
Mm-hmm.
And at first I was confused by that because I thought, no, we don't create our own reality.
Right.
That there is a moon out there somewhere and there is an ocean.
Right.
We're not creating our own reality. But what he means is that when we receive a message from somebody, you're very smart, we create a whole world around that sentence.
Right.
Okay. So we don't create the world, but we create a world. And each of us is creating our reality based on our experiences and our perceptions.
Right.
Okay. So that's what I like the way he clarifies that. And that's the introduction to this.
Right.
Is that when you're told something, when you're given a message, that you create a world around that message.
Right. And so he's not talking about a physical world.
Right.
He's talking about sort of your psychological world.
That's right. Your internal mental construct of how you view the world and the people in it.
Right. And I'll tell you, the first place that I went as I was, you know, thinking about this and reading through it is I immediately went to childhood because that reality, that psychological reality begins in childhood.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we see those people who are maybe more confident than they should be.
Right.
Is that a nice way to say it?
Mm-hmm.
They have more confidence than they have ability.
Ability, right.
We see people who have less confidence than they have than they should. That they have many more skills than right. they give themselves credit for.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of times those perceptions of their reality, that development of their reality
right.
is skewed based upon very early childhood experiences, based right. upon, you know, whether they felt that they were safe mm-hmm. and taken care of and everything mm-hmm. as a child. We talk about attachment
right.
Conditions and disorders and things like that. But when you begin life in a situation where things are uncertain, things aren't yeah. guaranteed, things mm-hmm. could easily go bad,
right?
Then you are certainly then in a scenario where your reality is going to be skewed in one mm-hmm. direction or another. And it's going to potentially affect you for the rest right. of your life.
Right. And interestingly, he begins the blog, this post, mm-hmm. by talking about this girl,
right.
This little student who's in counseling, who comes to him and says to him, "I am ugly and unpopular," mm-hmm. I think were the two things that mm-hmm. she said. Well, she had received that message
right.
from somebody, and she internalized it.
Right.
You know, it became, she just took it
mm-hmm.
and it became her reality that
right.
Whatever I am objectively, this is the person this is who I am now.
Right.
I am ugly and unpopular.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And from there, he takes us into what you and I would call cognitive behavioral therapy.
Right.
Okay,
right.
Because he's saying if we're going to treat these realities,
mm-hmm.
that we have to begin with three fundamental questions.
Right.
Okay, and the first one is, I'm putting on my glasses because I can't see it without them.
It was a cliffhanger.
Okay.
I was like, here we go.
Okay. Because, no, he's saying children hear a word or a phrase
right.
and they condense it into a worldview.
Right.
So imagine a 3 or 4 year old child hearing from a parent, "You're a worthless and you'll never amount to anything."
Right.
4 or 5 or 6 years old. Or a teenager.
Yeah.
You know, "You're a
Absolutely.
Slut." And, you know, imagine you get that message from a parent.
Yeah.
And the child receiving that message is creating they're condensing it and filling in all the edges.
Mm-hmm.
about who they are based on what you just said to them.
Right.
You know, and imagine the horrible things that, let's take it out of the child realm, what you say to your spouse.
Right.
I mean,
absolutely.
You know, you say something, whether you're angry or not, and your spouse, your significant other, creates this reality about
right.
themselves and about you and about your relationship based on a single word.
Yeah, I find it fascinating when I talk with and working with couples or working with people who are in relationships, mm-hmm. long-term relationships,
right.
married, whether they're married or not married, but they're just in long-term relationships, and they talk about being called names by their partner.
That's right.
Why would your partner, who, even if they're upset with you,
right.
they're supposed to love you, they're supposed to, you know, be there, have joined, you know, with you in this life mm-hmm. journey, and they're going to call you names. They're
right.
Nasty names. They're going to insult you and
denigrate you, criticize you.
And what I find is that a lot of people just accept it. Well, you know, not that they like it. Certainly, they don't like it. But they just sort of accept it as, well, that's mm-hmm. just normal.
Mm-hmm.
It's not normal. There's
yeah.
nothing
no.
normal about that. But you're absolutely right. What does that do to the person? What does that do to the individual who, you know, when you expect or when you are in this scenario where this mm-hmm. person is supposed to care, be one of the people in the world that care the most about you, is referring to you in that way.
That's the terrible irony when partners say that to each other, because you expect that out in the world, you know,
mm-hmm.
people who don't know you or don't trust you or don't like you. But the one place that it shouldn't happen mm-hmm. is at home. And for many people, that's the worst place. That's where it happens the most often.
Right.
And it's the most damaging, the most destructive, and the most vitriolic is it happens at home.
Mm-hmm.
You know, where people are called these horrible names by their partners.
Yeah. It's sad.
So, because you hear the word, and you create this reality. Okay, you create who you are. So in a therapy session, mm-hmm. he says the first thing you have to do, and it doesn't have to be in a therapy session, right. because if your partner is talking to you this way, mm-hmm. the first question is, what do you mean
by that?
What does that word mean? When you say I'm ugly, when you say I'm intemperate, impatient, angry, what exactly are you saying?
Right.
Okay.
Right.
And so you could ask a person that.
Yeah.
What do you mean when, what did you mean when you said I was nasty to you right. earlier today?
Therapeutically, we would say, what do you mean when you say that about yourself?
Right.
When you say that you're insufficient or you're not worthy, tell me what right. you mean by that.
Or I'm stupid. Mm-hmm. You know, younger kids.
Right.
Especially, and even teenagers mm-hmm. will come and say, well, I'm dumb.
Yeah.
Let's talk about dumb.
What does that mean?
What exactly do you mean by, I want to know what in your world dumb means.
Right.
Because in my world, it might be, in the reality that I've created,
right.
dumb may mean something completely different. So mm-hmm. I don't want to assume that when you use the word dumb, that it means what I have
right.
decided it means.
Right, because when they say dumb, they may be specifically talking about math.
That's right.
I'm dumb because I can't learn algebra.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
Well, what about these other... Oh, no, I'm fine there. I'm just dumb in math.
Right.
Okay. Well, then we can work from there.
Now we know what you're talking about.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
Or I'm ugly.
Right.
Okay. Tell me what that means. I want to understand. Mm-hmm. And you're not challenging them
right.
to say, oh, no. You're saying, I want to understand exactly what
right.
you mean when you say you're ugly.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
The second step is, how do you know this?
Right.
What tells you that?
What evidence
do you have to suggest that you are as you describe yourself?
Right. And usually that evidence is because somebody said so.
That's right.
But especially with young ones, you have to work to get to that point because right. they'll just say, well, it just is.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I just am.
Right.
And it's, okay, well, that's not evidence. That's just, you know,
mm-hmm.
Give me evidence. So they'll say, you know, this person says so, or my mom says so. That's the worst.
Mm-hmm.
Or they'll
yeah.
say, mm-hmm. you know, my husband says so.
Right.
That's even worse. So they usually bring evidence from others, from the outside.
Right. Or they might say, well, I failed this test,
right.
or
right.
I failed the FSA. Well, you failed the FSA. Now I know what we're talking about. So
right.
what we have to do is to get you to pass the FSA.
Right.
And if you don't, what alternatives do we have?
FSA, by the way, is the Florida State Assessment. It's the Florida Standards Assessment?
Florida Standards Assessment.
It's our statewide...
high stakes, do it or die
test.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Did you say stupid?
I did say stupid.
What he means by stupid...
The Florida Stupid Assessment.
That's right.
I hate that test.
No, it's so damaging.
It is.
You know.
But yeah, so they use those kinds of things as evidence to support
right.
their theory or their reality that
right.
they're stupid or dumb or
that's
insufficient.
Right. And if it's another kid saying it to them, or mm-hmm. a brother or sister, you can say, okay. If it's a parent
mm-hmm.
or an authority figure, you
right.
know, if your teachers are... saying this to you, if your parents are saying this to you, it's a little harder to work through that.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
But again, there are many other messages
right.
in the word, but it's a little bit more difficult when an adult authority figure, especially an authority figure you respect,
right.
mm-hmm. says it to you.
Right.
And then one of the most interesting things he says is in the third question.
Right.
What did you leave out?
Right.
You know, there's something...
Right.
Okay, this is what you've told me. Now let's unwrap this thing.
Right.
And I want to know what you're leaving out.
Right. Okay. And that's where you find out, well, I failed this test. Well, what did you leave out? Well, I didn't really study. And, you know, the teacher had a practice
right.
or a study group after school, and I just couldn't make it.
Right.
I just couldn't go.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you find out some of these other things that... You know, okay, well, there were some other resources,
mm-hmm.
other things that you could have done, that you probably knew that you could have done,
right.
should have done, that you didn't do.
Right.
Does that make you dumb? Or does that just make it to where we need to make better decisions next
right.
time?
Or are we just talking about math?
Right.
I think we're just talking about, we're not even talking about math, we're just talking about algebra.
Right.
And maybe we're only talking about, what's that, the functional, graphing functions?
Yeah.
What is that called?
The...
You know what I'm talking about.
I know what you're talking about, but...
But it may just be that that we're talking about. You know, yeah. You can handle... Look, you got good grades on all these other things.
Maybe it's just polynomials.
Graphic...
We just do polynomials.
Okay, so maybe it's only polynomials, and so then we have to just work on that. So what are people leaving out of this discussion? And again, I go back to talking to your partner. Mm-hmm. You know, what did you mean by that? And how can I... And then when you start to explain, you can say, well, what I'm really angry about is that when I come home... You know, it's not that you're a horrible housekeeper. It's just that what I'm really angry about is when I come home, you're watching TV or, you know, on your cell phone, or you're out shopping or you're doing something else rather than taking care of... You know, that's what I'm really angry about. So what are we leaving out is also the important issue. Because in order to use rational emotive behavioral therapy... is you have to get to the real emotions. And are you just dealing with these impressions, or are you really dealing with true information?
Right. And earlier you said this is what we would call cognitive behavioral.
Right.
Depending on the form that you put it in, that's the rational part.
Right.
You know, that the rational part is, okay, so let's talk about what's really happening, or let's rationalize it a little bit. Mm-hmm. And so in cognitive behavioral therapy, you call that cognitive behavioral modeling. You call it, you know...
Because this is how we're thinking about... This is how I think about...
Right.
And this frames it.
Right.
It helps you frame... These three questions help you frame it.
Absolutely.
And get to your feelings.
Yeah. So through those three questions...
Right.
You can start to get at... Especially when we have problematic realities, unhealthy realities, psychological realities that just aren't consistent with the way that we should be, or what the way real reality.
The real reality. That's right. I mean, I'm looking at this person as, you know, there are many people who come in and say, well, I'm not attractive, or I'm not this, or I'm homely, or I'm... Let's figure out. Right. What all that means.
Yeah. I love it when, you know, because this happens a lot with academics, with school.
Sure.
With especially with teenagers. High achieving, strong students come in completely distressed.
Right.
And you find out, why are you so distressed? Well, I'm not making the grades I should make. Mm-hmm. Well, what grades are you making? Or, I have a 4.0 GPA. Okay. So tell me the only reason I have a 4.0 GPA is because that's weighted.
Right.
Because I'm in 10th grade, but I have 3 AP courses and 2 college courses, and, you know, in a couple of them I have B's and weighted. And it's, you want to say, stop.
Right.
Just stop.
That's right.
You don't... You're putting yourself in these situations that are just so extraordinary. And then you're holding... Not only are you putting yourself in extraordinary situations, but then you're holding yourself to extraordinary expectations that... it's just the nature.
One more
of
example.
Yeah.
You and I have taught graduate students for a long time, and graduate students will enter the program. They're enthusiastic.
Yeah.
They're motivated. They really want it. They say, "My goal is to get all A's. I'm gonna get all A's. I'm gonna get a 4.0 in this program."
Mm-hmm.
It changes the entire experience.
Right. Absolutely.
And it's not that it's an unrealistic goal necessarily.
Right.
It may be perfectly within your ability range to get an A in every course. What you're doing, however, is that you're putting yourself under an artificial...
Right.
You're going to have plenty to do. You're going to have plenty to worry about.
Right.
Okay? Don't add that to the... If you don't get all A's, guess what? Nobody's going to know.
Yeah.
And nobody's going to care.
Right. You know,
It doesn't make any difference whether you get most of the A's, all A's, or a few A's.
Right.
It's not going to matter.
Right.
Only you are making that matter.
Yeah.
It's an artificial and distressing goal.
Well, but as we've talked about earlier this week, sometimes the school puts that pressure, that creates that reality for you. And, and you know, I was lucky enough, I think, to where I did not put myself under that expectation. I was like,
it wasn't,
you know,
one of my...
I'm
going to
pass my classes because I have so many other things that I want to do, at least of which...
Raise children.
Raise kids.
Right.
But then at the same time, you have professors who are like, oh no, you should be making an A in every class. And if you're not making an A in every class, then maybe you're not ready for graduate school.
They do.
Are you kidding me?
Right. That's true.
You know, don't forget that I have more kids than you do.
That's right.
And you have me.
I have kids.
And you have me here in class for 12 hours a day. Oh. And I have a wife and kids at home.
Right.
But that's okay. You know,
no, don't. So don't put.
So I'll take my B in that class.
Get out with my skin.
When I was working on my license, they didn't ask me what my GPA was.
No, nobody asks.
Yeah.
I mean, the only. Don't create artificial stressors. Okay, yeah. And that is an artificial stressor. It's what we do with K-12 mm-hmm. students when we say right. you have to pass this test. It's an artificial stressor.
Yeah.
It serves no useful purpose.
Absolutely.
Okay.
Absolutely.
Nor does getting all A's. It doesn't yeah. serve, and it could have some deleterious effects. So
you don't have to make that your reality.
No, it's
you
right.
don't have to. Right. So you have our permission not to make that your reality.
There you go. But we talked about you have permission to be optimistic. You have permission not to get all A's. If you do, great, we'll celebrate. If you don't, it's okay.
Yeah.
Don't set that as your primary goal.
Yeah. Not to the point where it creates distress.
Right, that's right. So, learn something.
Yeah. All right, I think that's all for today.
We better stop.
Yeah, or else we're going to keep going.
Yeah.
So, all right, so until next time, stay happy, stay healthy, and forget to be afraid.